and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Leah Keith. She's worked her way up through Hollywood as an executive at DreamWorks and Disney, and more recently as a producer and writer for projects like Best Worst Weekend Ever, The Polar Bears, and Julie and the Phantoms. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Leah.
Thank you for having me.
So, kind of starting with your origin story, what got you interested in film?
I love movies and always have, you know, as a kid, it was just, you know, my family's big movie watchers. And I think it was just the love of just storytelling and the way that stories unfolded. My mother was a retired school teacher and was a school librarian. So story time was a big deal in our family. And it's just kind of how I always connected to the world. So it was a logical transition for me.
Fair enough. So you didn't study film at university. You actually went to Columbia studying literature. How has that applied to your work in film?
Well, I actually went to Barnard, which is the all-women's liberal arts college within Columbia University, which is even more specified because it really is a liberal arts education geared towards young women. And I was a literature major. And again, I think I just have always loved stories. So whether it was novels or movies or plays, theater, you know, it was just kind of always my thing. I think my connection to everything that I always read as a student was I always saw it very cinematically, just innately. And, you know, became very curious about adaptations and the way that novels were turned into films. So again, it just kind of, my personal interest just sort of naturally evolved into a way of making a living.
Fair enough. So I talked to a lot of Canadians on the show, but you're a US native. So what was your path from Atlanta to Hollywood?
Well, yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. Didn't know anybody who worked in the film business. It wasn't something consciously that I kind of set out to do. When I graduated college, a group of friends were moving to LA to go to film school, to go to USC. I also had an acting interest. I did study theater in school. And at the time I thought, and I was a dancer, I thought I would stay in New York and pursue that for a bit. But the LA thing kind of appealed to me because I loved movies and television. And so I just sort of did one of those impetuous, you know, tell my parents, I think I want to move to LA. And they were very supportive. And we kind of made a deal that I would stay a year or so and see how things went. And if it didn't work out, I'd go back to the East Coast. And that was many, 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 many years ago.
Yes, fair enough. So when you got to Hollywood, you started working as a studio executive. That's kind of the path that you took to get your foot in the door. Can you describe the job of a studio executive and what that role entails? Because I feel like it doesn't have a lot of like external visibility, especially at the film student level. Genuinely, I don't know much about what that role is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it wasn't a conscious choice. You know, looking back, I would say that what I really wanted to do was just pursue a writing career. But I felt after graduating and, you know, my parents doing everything to kind of give me this wonderful education, it was like to then say, oh, and I'm going to go pursue this very bohemian thing and like go try to be a writer. Like it just didn't feel like the right thing to do. After being here for a while, and I was actually teaching, I taught kindergarten, first and second grades for a few years when I got out of college. And I started developing my college thesis into a documentary film. And I was working with some amazing Emmy award-winning producers who then hired me to do a consulting job for them. And developing a script and developing a story was an area that I didn't really know existed. So I started to pursue that. And then I thought, well, if I worked at a studio, I would get a really good overview of every part, every aspect of the business. So why don't I try that? That way I can, you know, kind of see what I like and what I'm, you know, I think writing wasn't the thing that was on the forefront of my mind. At that point, I just wanted to get a job in the movie business where I could actually afford to live and pay for myself and have a career and learn some stuff. You know, I kind of told myself and my family, I'm just going to be a sponge and I'm just going to pick up as much as I can. And I was really fortunate because, you know, it's sort of one of those things where when something's destined for you, it just kind of finds you. So I was able to get my first job in the business through a couple of really amazing relationships as a creative executive at Disney. And I didn't know what that job was, and I quickly learned. And, you know, in terms of being the creative executive or in the creative department of a studio, you are the sort of creative gatekeeper for the studio's money, you know, so that the studio is getting the product that they think they're getting and that the investment that they're making in the film is ultimately being executed in a way that is in keeping with what they think they're getting. So you work closely with producers and the director, and you work at every stage, whether it's an original idea, a raw development, you know, hiring a writer and working with the producers and the writer to kind of realize the script. And then once a script is sort of fast-tracked to kind of move forward, you're spearheading with the producer of finding who's going to direct it, and then all the creative choices after that. And then once something gets into casting, you work with casting department to kind of cast, and, you know, work in the production department to make sure that budgets are aligned and everybody's making the same thing. And then you kind of oversee the production. And again, it's always on behalf of the studio. So it was indeed a really good education. And when you're a buyer, because you're buying material, it helps develop relationships around town because you have the money, you know. So if filmmakers and producers are pitching to you or trying to sell to you. So, you know, when I decided to make the shift to the other side, it was helpful that I had done that.
For sure. That totally makes sense. It sounds like you're very involved in a lot of the process. So what did you learn from being an executive at Disney and DreamWorks that you've taken to your job as a producer and as a writer?
It's really helpful to have been in the room. It's helpful to know the headspace that people are in, kind of the thought process that they go through when making a decision if they're going to invest money in something. And for studios, we're obviously talking about a certain level of budget, right? So it's not like necessarily lower budget stuff or indie stuff, or in television abides by similar rules, similar kind of governing things. But, you know, in streaming and television have kind of different boxes that they have to check. But from a psychological standpoint, when you've had to implement certain thought process to what constitutes something worthy of being bought for that particular place, because it's different at every place, it does help when you are on the selling side to then be able to say, this isn't going to work. I find myself always saying, well, if I were them, I wouldn't buy this. Or if I were them, I'd want to see this, or, you know, want to see that. So I find myself kind of switching hats a lot, just in terms of thought process.
That makes sense. So what ended up prompting the change? Because I know you said you had always wanted to write, or that was the kind of path that you were on. So what prompted the change finally into producing and then writing and that kind of career switch?
A desire for happiness. it got to a point, I was really happy that I had spent so much time doing what I'd done, but it just, my heart wasn't singing. You know, it didn't feel, once I got to a certain place, you know, it's like in a corp, because it is a corporation and it's a corporate job, and it behaves as such. So at some point, going up the ladder and all of that kind of stuff is sort of the expected. What I discovered pretty early on was that I liked getting my hands dirty. You know, it was the grassroots in the room making of the stuff that was what I connected to. It wasn't the more foresty, corporate-y things. I was definitely a tree girl. I wanted to be in there. I wanted to be making it. The craft of actually constructing was what made me excited. So, you know, life just kind of tells you when it's time. And so I knew, I was like, it's time to sort of switch sides of the desk.
Fair enough. I'm glad that you're pursuing what makes you happy. So a lot of the stories that you've worked on have been family TV shows and films. What draws you to stories that are more like universally enjoyable, you know, kids shows or commercials or things like that, that have this kind of universal appeal?
That was not conscious. I think because I started my career at Disney, it's a space that I understood and liked a lot. You know, I had taught kids before, but, you know, for me, it was just, I wanted to tell good stories. You know, I had a lot of relationships and kind of a reputation of having done a lot of family stuff. And so, you know, one thing kind of begets the other. But I would say that any of those kind of childlike wonder kinds of stories that appeal to the child within all of us, and things that the entire family can enjoy, those were stories that when I was a kid spoke to me. And I definitely do work on things that aren't always family, but it is an area that I always kind of come back to for some reason.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I have an interest in as well. I love stories that can be enjoyed by anyone. So in terms of your writing, you wrote a novel, A Rented Life, and then you've now adapted that into a screenplay. How was the process of adapting a novel, and what were some of the challenges in that, especially your own novel?
Yeah, that was a really interesting process. You know, the novel was, and I did this quite a while ago, but the novel was inspired by something that happened to me. And it was part of the transition period where I was leaving my executive life and wanting to kind of really dive into the writing. And, you know, I kind of came up through Hollywood, and I do have a literature background, and I love novels. And so I felt like, you know what, I don't want to write. And I had written a couple scripts that no one ever saw. But I was like, I want to write a novel. Like, that just felt like what I wanted to sink my teeth into. So I took several years and I wrote a novel, which is not an easy thing to do. And then many years later, through a series of events, it kind of came off the shelf. And Harpo Films was interested in the book and hired me to adapt myself. And, you know, it definitely brought me back to my college days of looking at, you know, really having a personal interest in novels that had been adapted into films before. I had also worked as an executive with several writers in adapting. So I knew intellectually that the job was novels are internal and film is dramatic. So that's step one. The required job, right? You're just going to take, you know, what is a character's internal journey and dramatize that in a way that has an emotional life that is cinematic for an audience to grab onto. It is definitely a challenging thing, but I did have the ability to kind of try to be as objective as I could. I also tend to be, even in my prose writing, cinematic, because that's just kind of how I see things. So it was internal, but it also did have a visual style to the book that was clear. So it was just a matter of picking and choosing moments and scenes from the novel that rung to me as being cinema worthy. And I sort of put the building blocks together that way.
That's so interesting. So you did mention that you also have adapted, like obviously through your work as a producer and an executive. What did you learn from that you applied to your own work, but also like how did those processes differ? When you're not necessarily
it
writing
didn't differ.
It didn't differ.
It was the same thing. Like, you know, you'll have 5 pages of something that is all in the character's head. And the job is, okay, how do I dramatize this? Working as a producer or an executive with a writer to adapt someone else's book and having to do it to myself, for me, was the same skill set. The advantage, having crafted the characters from whole cloth, was that I had a toolkit, of emotional information about that character and background information that if I hadn't written the book, I wouldn't have. So the novel has things that the screenplay didn't have, and the screenplay had things that the novel didn't have. And because I created it from whole cloth and it was all fiction, I was able to just depart from things and feel comfortable that it was still organic to the DNA of the characters and the situation that I had initially created. Many times if a writer is adapting a book that they didn't write, they're still going to craft stuff, new stuff, because that writer has to kind of take ownership of that narrative and take ownership of those characters. But at least in my case, it was extremely organic to what I had initially written. So when I departed, it was cool.
That's interesting, and it's really fascinating, because that's obviously what you want, is to stay true to the heart of the characters and the emotional journey and all of that. It's incredible that you were able to stay objective in that process. So what would you say is, and this is really broad and a very hard question to answer, but what would you say is the hardest part of writing, just in general?
Oh my goodness.
I know.
The hardest part, it depends on what kind of schedule you're on. If it's a self-imposed schedule, because it's right, you know, you're writing something for yourself or writing something that you're going to sell later, it's the discipline of doing it every day, forcing yourself to do it. You know, if you're on a deadline because you're on a job or something like that, then that's a different energy a little bit, because solving creative problems with deadlines attached to them is a little different than having no deadline, you know,
yeah,
other than the one you impose on yourself. So that probably is.
Yeah, that's hard. So on the flip side, what is the most exciting part about writing to you?
Oh, I love a blank page. I welcome it. I love it. Like, some people, sitting down and doing it is tough. That's not tough for me. I tend to write while walking. For me, it's like I walk and things come to me and scenes come to me and character things, you know, that's how I actually do the real work. Or as I like say, the hard part of the job, I don't even do at the computer. The hard part is conjuring and kind of getting inside of it. The sitting down part of it for me is the fun part. You know, both get tough at times, but I think that I've learned enough about the way my brain works to know that I don't have to be sitting at the computer to be writing, and I can be washing dishes and I can be walking and I can be doing other things, and it'll come, because it always comes. You know, even when you're in a block and I'm struggling, I just say, oh, well, I just won't think about it for a while and I'll just do something else.
So how does your work as a producer affect your work as a writer and vice versa?
Well, that's, it's a very weird duality in some ways. You know, I would say that if I'm writing, it depends on what I'm writing, obviously, but if I know it's something that will be getting produced or something that I feel has a good shot at that or whatever, obviously you have to be responsible to budget and scale and scope and those kinds of things, because ultimately you want the thing to get made. Like, the whole point of it, at least in film and television, it's not a novel. It's actually a blueprint for someone else to take what you've done and, you know, realize it. So you aspire to have the thing be made. I just try to not let the practical part of me hinder my creative part. So I take the producer hat off in a way, especially early in the process of trying to craft characters and try to craft putting the story together and things like that. I don't think about money, at least. And I prefer not to think about it, because I feel like if I do, then my decisions will be driven by something other than what they should be driven by, which is story and character. And then when you get drilled down closer to actually making something, then I'm pretty good about understanding what the essence of a scene is, or an essence of a moment, or what something needs to do emotionally and what you want the audience to feel. And I come from a school of, like, you can make anything at any budget. You know, I mean, really, I've worked in various budgets, so any story can be made, you know, more economically or fancier and bigger and with more money. So it's just about reminding myself and the people that I'm working with, what's the point of this? Like, ultimately, why does it exist in the story? And what do we want people to feel from it? And then you dress it however elaborately it can be dressed. When I get to that stage of it, that's what I always take myself back to, just the true reason that it exists for story.
So kind of going off of that, how do you think being a writer has helped your work as a producer?
I understand. I am compassionate and empathetic. So when I am the non-writing producer person, you know, I did a show for Netflix a few years ago called Best Worst Weekend Ever, and I was a non-writing executive producer and working with some folks that I didn't know yet. Some filmmakers that I didn't know, and they were already into the process and I came in late. And, you know, it's a compassion for the process. First of all, I know how hard it is. Like, I've done it. And so I understand that, especially when you get closer to actually trying to make it, and the realities of money and filmmaking and television making are just real realities that you just have to accept. So, you know, you get to a point where it's over a budget and it's demanding that you make some cuts and kill some darlings and all of that. That is a fun challenge to me, which is sort of twisted, because then again, it's like, okay, I'll jump in here with you as much as you want me to, and let's figure out why does it exist and how can we kind of change it. So I think it's, at least I hope, and I've heard from the people that I work with when I am just producing, that they feel like there's a partner in it with them. You know, I'm not just kind of dictating this has to be done and good luck to you, that I'm willing to kind of get in and try to help. And I think that's just because I've done it, and it is not easy, especially if there's a time constraint and that kind of thing on you.
That's awesome. So kind of switching gears a bit, you've been a panelist and guest speaker at many different festivals and universities talking about the craft of storytelling. What is one thing that you make sure to tell students?
That it's important to just be authentic to who you are and whatever that you're doing, you know, no matter what area of the industry that you choose to work in. I believe that people do better jobs when they're happy. And I think you're happy when you're speaking from who you really are. And that was something that I had to learn, you know, when I was sort of making the decision to change career paths a little bit, change my trajectory. It was driven by what I felt innately I was the best at, you know, and where I would be good and where I would be happy. And I, if I was happy, my successes would come. And that if I was putting myself in a situation because I felt like it was the right thing to do, or other people wanted me to, or it made sense, or it was practical, that, you know, it would be harder.
That totally makes sense. And I think is a good reminder as a creative, because it can be hard sometimes choosing between comfort and safety and money, and kind of putting yourself out there. So what do you think are some of the most important skills that a producer can have? Because we haven't really talked much about your work as a producer, but I think it is something that quite a few people are interested in. So what are some important skills that you can have as a producer?
I think the most important skill, honestly, is listening. And I think that when you're in that position, you're in a leadership role, you know, and you're trying to help, you know, see the forest and not get bogged down in the trees because everybody else is down in the trees and you need to be forest for a while and be responsible to the economic stuff, but also be responsible to story and your filmmakers and take care of them and make sure that they get the tools and resources that they need and that resources are, and money and things are being allocated in the best interest of what's on the screen and not for other reasons. So I think that it's important to listen to everybody and what their needs are and what their concerns are and try to attack every situation without judgment and imposing your own personal thoughts and beliefs on it before you hear what the folks who are executing it say and think. And when you're in the thick of a situation in production, particularly in, you know, and time is an element, being calm and actually listening to people, I think is something that folks appreciate because they want to be heard and they want to feel like if you are part of the decision-making body that ultimately is going to make a call that's going to affect them, I think people will take that news and take that better if they felt like they could trust you and that you really understood what they were going for. So I think that, I mean, ultimately, I think that's the most important skill.
That makes complete sense. So obviously a lot of your job centers around relationships and creative partnerships. How do you make sure when you're a producer that you're putting together the right creative team, or when you're working as a writer more collaboratively that you're working as a team player?
Again, I think it's because I've tried to listen to everybody. You know, I just try to understand what people are going for. And if I disagree with it, I try to couch my suggestions in an alternative way of seeing something, you know, as opposed to saying, well, this is what you need to do. I mean, not that those words haven't ever left my mouth, but I try to say, okay, well, that's a choice, you know, but have you ever thought about doing it this way? Or you could do it this way, or maybe if that's not working and it's not working, so why don't we talk about what the intent is and see if together we can come up with a solution.
Yeah.
And I think that's a challenge when tensions are high.
Right.
And people
are I believe that. But no, that makes sense. And I know offering up your best creatively is obviously the goal. So that makes complete sense. Kind of, again, switching gears a little bit. So there's a lot of important work happening in the world right now. And it seems that change is starting to happen when it comes to marginalized voices, getting more of a platform. But that hasn't always been the case. So can you speak a bit to your experience as a Black woman working at a high level in the industry, working in Disney and DreamWorks and all these big companies and working your way up?
In my experience, which is, you know, very unique to me. I was more often than not the only person of color in many a room. And I recognized it, whether other people recognized it or not, was not my concern. I felt like the fact that I did have a seat at the table meant that it was incumbent upon me to do everything I could to make sure that the decisions that were being made were reflective of the way that the world looks. So every list I put together, every time I looked at material or whatever, or looked at casting or looked at a role or looked at characters or whatever, it's always through that lens, you know, and it may not be something that I say overtly every time because I don't need to. It's just, if I look at a list and I don't see any people of color on it, I'm going to say something about that and say, this doesn't look like the world. Like this is, you know, or even characters that are written that don't necessarily have to be specific to a particular race for story purposes. It is a conscious choice on my part, always has been, always will be, to make sure that I ask questions about, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And I can't point to an experience that I've had specifically where I was ever told no with regard to that. It's always, by and large, which is actually very sad, and is, you know, something that I hope will change. It's always a revelation to people. Oh yeah, you're right. It could be this. Oh yeah, you're right. I forgot about that person. Oh yeah, you're right. Which tells me that's not other people's default position. It's not the way that they see the world. It's the way I see the world. And if I'm given a seat at the table, I'm always going to do it that way.
For sure. So as emerging filmmakers or aspiring filmmakers, is there anything, any advice that you could give to us to make sure that we're doing the most to make the future of the film industry more reflective of the actual world that we live in?
I think you just have to be sensitive, and I think you have to be conscious. You know, I think consciousness, it's like all people have a universal set of emotions. You know, and they are not specific to certain races or genders or sexual orientations. People want to fall in love. They want to be loved. They want, you know, security. They want comfort, those kinds of things. And so I think when you are telling a story, obviously people tell the stories of things they know and folks they know and experiences they know, and they should. And making sure that we have a good mixture of all kinds of people telling those stories is what gives us a diversified repertoire of content. But I think even within that, you know, depending on what kind of story that you're telling, I think it's important to be conscious of the world you're writing, who you're writing it for. Once you get to a place of, you know, actually making money and selling things, you want, when you look at the people who are working for you, you know, you want to make sure that the people who represent you and who take care of you are people who see the world and accept the world the way that it is. And that if you walk in a room and you don't feel like you see people who look like you, or you don't see people who you, it doesn't even matter. Everything's skewed in one direction and it doesn't look like a world that you're familiar with, then it's incumbent upon you to say something and to make sure that you're around people who protect your vision and are like-minded in that way. And when they aren't, then, you know, you should say something about that. Those are the steps that will make it, not being silent, finding a way to educate and elucidate and, you know, make sure that people are aware and seeing things that you see, even when they don't, is the way that change comes.
Thank you so much for that. So I have one last question before I open it up to a few of my peers, and that is, what advice would you give to someone who's just starting their career now and is aspiring to be in your position one day?
Pick your friends well and stick together. You know, it's the folks you come up with that really ultimately become your network. Even if you switch sides, I mean, like in my case, a lot of the people that I started with and came up with run things. You know, they run things, and that's, and I'm proud of them and I'm happy for them, and they hire me and I love that, and that's awesome, you know, and I do good jobs for them because I want them to shine. So I think that keeping your network tight and keeping each other up and helping each other with your work is the way forward.
That's amazing. So now I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends to ask some questions.
My question is kind of, because as I look at, like, I guess my film school in my class, everyone I suppose, who comes in, or most people really want to be like the writer director, like the next Tarantino, or someone who's kind of shooting like their own script. So could you give some advice to maybe the individual who really wants to be a writer director? Is it reasonable to think that you will be shooting your own scripts, or do you think you should be more open-minded to like shooting someone else's work or giving your screenplay up to someone else? Just what are your thoughts around the writer director kind of complex, I suppose?
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, if you come up with a vision for something and you feel like you are the person to execute that vision and that's what you set out to do, then you do that with conviction and passion and you set forth on that. I think that it's also a different set of skills to direct something someone else has written. And I think that makes you better at directing. And I think it's a different set of skills to write something and hand it off to somebody. And I think that also gives you a different, you know, collaborating with a director, if you're the writer, is a wonderful process. And getting inside someone else's head, particularly on material that you created, is exciting because you get to watch them take what you wrote and blow it up and say, wow, you know, they really got what I was going for, or let me help you kind of see and understand exactly what I was going for and have a collaboration. I mean, it's all a collaborative art, and I find the collaborations are really fun, but that doesn't mean that, you know, I've also written a novel and I know what it's like to like want to see it from soup to nuts and see it all the way through and feel like you need to complete that journey. So I think it's being open, and when life brings you a left turn that you didn't expect, I personally think it's important to listen to those things and evaluate them. But for people who don't want to do that, I think there's room for that too.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm just curious, because you've done both work on novels and screenplays and also adapting one from the other, how do you decide what idea or story belongs in which medium? Because they're very different sometimes, to me at least, to write.
They are, and that's a very cool question. And I think it's not conscious, and it may not always be right. You know, I came up with something a few years ago that I thought was a series idea, and I ran it down as a series idea and talked to producer friends about it as a series idea, and it kind of was an uphill battle, and I realized it wasn't moving. And then one day it hit me, this is not a series idea, this is like probably young adult fiction, probably a series of books, that the story lends itself better to that. And then it, you know, it goes on that kind of mental post-it for me of like, oh, I'll get to that one day. You know, it's happened to me a few times where I realized, this isn't really what I'm trying to make it. This wants to be another animal, you know, and then it's about, do you want to do the legwork to shift it, or do you want to just put it in that file with those half-baked things that all writers kind of dip into at some point?
Cool. Thank you.
All right. I realize, Leah, that I have completely forgot to remind you about film recommendations, which is unfair. But do you have any off the top of your head?
Oh,
any
no. Films?
I know. I'm the worst. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness. I this is one you got to think through. I'm going to go back to when I was a younger person and, you know, getting on the path. I think that when Star Wars came out, I had never seen anything like that in my life. That's probably the biggest life-changing thing as a young person that I'd ever seen, and that made me go, oh my goodness. You know, it was the first time, like, the kinds of stories that I would make up in my bedroom, or that I would envision, or things I would dream about, was actually in front of me that I could see. And visual effects allowed the rules of what I had seen previously to be broken and could actually get more imaginative. And that was arresting. And I think that even though I was too young to kind of make any conscious decisions about a career choice, I think that was probably the seminal event of my young life that made me love what movies could do.
That's a great answer.
That's the most important one that I can come up with on the fly.
I am so sorry about that. I am going to email you, and I'm going to get you to recommend a few, if that's all right. And then I'll put that in the description.
I'm happy to do that.
All right. So to all of those of you who are listening to the podcast, be sure to look in the description to get Leah's film recommendations, and I apologize for that. I don't know how that slipped my mind. but thank you so much, Leah, for being so generous with your time and your answers. It was such a pleasure talking with you, and thanks to those of you who asked questions. But that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday.